Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Standard for Pleading Falsity Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 3rd, 2014, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Omnicare v. Laborers District Council Construction Industry Pension Fund. This case concerns Section 11 of the Securities Act of 1933, which authorizes suit by a purchaser of securities issued under a registration statement filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission if the registration statement contained an untrue statement of material fact or omitted to state a material fact required to be stated therein or necessary to make the statement therein not misleading. The question here is whether a Section 11 plaintiff may plead that a statement of opinion was untrue merely by alleging that the opinion itself was objectively wrong, as the Sixth Circuit has concluded, or whether the plaintiff also must allege that the statement was subjectively false, requiring allegations that the speaker's genuinely held opinion was different from the one expressed, as the Second, Third, and Ninth Circuits have held. To discuss the case, we have George Conway, who is a partner in the litigation department of Wachtell, Lipton, Rosen, and Katz. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Conway.
Well, the Omnicare case, Omnicare versus Laborers District Council Construction Industry Pension Fund, number 13435, is a case about Section 11 of the Securities Act of 1933. And what Section 11 is the provision, it's the provision that provides essentially strict liability for registration statements that are issued in connection with the public offering of securities. When you take a company and you're taking it public and you're issuing shares, you have to prepare a registration statement that contains all the information that investors would want to know about a company. And what Section 11 says is that if there are false statements in that registration statement, then the people who sign the registration statement, the issuer of the securities, and even underwriters and others can be held liable. In particular, what Section 11 says is that, quote, in case any part of the registration statement, when such part became effective, contained an untrue statement of material fact or omitted to state a material fact required to be stated therein or necessary to make the statements therein not misleading, close quote, people can be held liable. And it's a very powerful provision for plaintiff's lawyers because unlike the granddaddy of liability provisions under the federal securities laws, which is Section 10B, the implied right of action, Section 11 doesn't require intentional falsehoods. It doesn't require scienter. So, again, it's a strict liability provision, and that's one of the reasons why this case is important. Now, the issue in Omnicare is what is a material fact? What is an untrue statement of material fact? Or at least that's the statement, that's the question as far as the defendants are concerned. If you have an opinion, if somebody expresses an opinion in the registration statement, when is it a false statement of material fact? Is it when it turns the if it's just because the opinion's not believed? Is that what's required to make it false? Or if it just turns out to be wrong, even though the person expressing the opinion or belief believed it, does that make it false? And the answer, at least until this case came about, was always thought to have been decided in a case called Virginia Bank Shares versus Sandberg, a case, a 1991 case decided by the Supreme Court. And that case involved the proxy provisions of the federal securities law, Section 14A in particular. And essentially what happened there was that the Supreme Court upheld a jury verdict against a bunch of directors of Virginia Bank Shares because they had made statements in a proxy statement about a merger being fair to the shareholders that they didn't believe. And the court held that because the directors didn't believe that the price was a fair and high one that the Virginia Bank Shares shareholders were receiving in a merger, and because the price in fact was found by the jury not to be high and fair, the defendants could be held liable. And what happened after that was that all of the courts of appeals, except for the Court of Appeals in the Omnicare case, who addressed the question, believed that for an opinion to be a false statement of fact under any of these provisions of the federal securities laws, you had to show two things. One is that the opinion was not believed by the speaker, the opinion or belief was not believed, and two, that the fact as to which the opinion pertained, in other words, was also untrue. In other words, there had to be subjective and objective falsity. And in fact, there was a concurring opinion in the Virginia Bankshares case, written, a very short one, written by Justice Scalia, where he basically said, as I understand the court's opinion, if the directors say we believe the price is fair and they don't believe that, and in fact it's not fair, then they can be held liable. So every court of appeals after that took this to mean you had to show subjective and objective falsity for an opinion to be false under the federal securities laws provisions that talked about untrue statements of material fact, including Section 11. In the case of Section 11, at least two or three, I think a third one came down this summer, courts of appeals held that precisely that interpretation, that you had to have subjective falsity. The Sixth Circuit in the Omnicare case went the other way. And what the Sixth Circuit held was that, well, Virginia Bankshares was really just the statement about subjective falsity really went to a different element of the federal securities law claim there, the scienter element. And the court simply assumed that there was scienter and didn't really address what was necessary to show that a factual statement was in fact false. And the court went on, the Sixth Circuit went on to say that because Section 11 doesn't require scienter, it doesn't make any sense to say that a fact is false only, an opinion expressed in a registration statement is false only if the speaker disbelieved it. And so the Sixth Circuit concluded that if you express an opinion about something in a registration statement, you say, we believe, I don't know, we have the best product. We sell the best widgets in the world. It turns out that opinion is untrue in the sense that your widgets aren't the best in the world. You can be held liable even if you did believe your widgets were the best. And that's the issue that was presented to the Supreme Court in the argument this week. At the Supreme Court, the defendants who lost in the Sixth Circuit argued that essentially what everyone had thought Virginia Bankshares had said, which is that a statement of opinion or belief is false if it's disbelieved, and the reason only if it's disbelieved, and the reason for that is you're not, when you're expressing a belief, you are simply representing not that the ultimate thing, that your belief is in fact accurate, but that it in fact is your belief. The defendants also, you know, they argued that on the basis of just, what is the fact? The fact that you're expressing in your belief is the fact of your belief. I don't know if that quite captures it, but that's essentially what the argument was. And they argue that any other construction of Section 11 would essentially impose strict liability on people who honestly believed opinions and would as a result deter people from putting opinions in registration statements. Now, the government came in, and they relied very heavily on Virginia Bankshares for at least the construction of what a material fact is and what a false statement of fact is. The government came in and made a slightly different argument. They argued also that the judgment should be actually vacated, and what they argue was, well, the subjective disbelief isn't the only way you can be held liable under Section 11. Section 11, the government points out, doesn't just punish people for untrue statements of material facts. It also imposes liability if you omit to state a material fact necessary to make the statements in the registration statement not misleading. And what the government argues is that, well, you're not just when you express a belief, you're not just making a statement that of fact that this is my belief. You're also saying there's a basis, there's a reasonable basis for your belief. So you're making two representations. You're representing A, I believe X, and B, I have a reason to to believe X, a reasonable basis to believe X. And the government's argument, to tie it back to the statute, is that if, in fact, you don't have a reasonable belief for the belief that you're expressing, then, and you don't tell people that, in other words, that you don't tell people that you, you know, your tires are safe. You tell people that you believe your tires are safe, but in fact, there are some test results on your desk that show that the tires blow up. Then you are misleading the public, and you are omitting to state a fact, a material fact necessary to make your statement, your opinion, not misleading, if you fail to disclose your lack of a reasonable basis for the opinion you're expressing. And the third, and that's essentially the government's argument. The government points in support of that, doesn't it, not only relies on that piece of the text that I read, but it relies on some common law statements in common law cases that also talk about a reasonable basis for opinion, and also some statement, some aspects of the restatements of torts that also provide support to the government's argument. And they also point out that the SEC, this has been the SEC's longstanding interpretation of this language in Section 11 and in other similar statutes. As far as Virginia bank shares is concerned, they say that Virginia bank shares doesn't dispose of the issue, because in Virginia bank shares, the court was dealing with a case where the defendants had been found to have made an intentionally false statement. They did not believe the belief that they were expressing. And as a result, the government argues, the court had no occasion to determine whether there was some other basis upon which people could be held liable for making a false or misleading statement of opinion. In other words, an opinion that is false in the sense that the speaker disbelieves it is sufficient for liability, but not necessarily necessary for liability. And according to the government, Virginia bank shares didn't address what was necessary in all cases. Now, as far as the plaintiffs are concerned, the plaintiffs who are the respondents in the Supreme Court, they agreed with that. They agree that Virginia bank shares, for that reason, doesn't control or doesn't exclude the possibility that somebody can be held liable even if they believe the statements of belief they express. But they argue that the Sixth Circuit was right anyway, notwithstanding that they also agree that the government's interpretation of Section 11 is right. And what they're arguing is this: there are three ways, not just two, as the government says, for a statement of belief to be untrue or misleading under Section 11. One is if the speaker doesn't believe it. Two is if the speaker doesn't have a reasonable basis for it, the belief that he's expressing. And the third is what the Sixth Circuit held, which is if it turns out to be false. In other words, if they say they believe X and turns out that X is wrong. And the argument there is that people don't just take a statement of belief to be just a statement of belief. They also take it to mean that what you believe is true. And in the case of Omnicare, what happened with Omnicare, Omnicare is a pharmacy benefits manager, I guess, and it has to comply with complex state and federal regulations. And the statements at issue in its registration statement were that it was in compliance with relevant federal and state law. We believe we are in compliance with federal and state law. And it turned out, according to the complaint, that they were not. And Omnicare's argument below was, well, you didn't plead sufficient facts to show that we didn't believe the statement that we made. And the plaintiff's argument and the Sixth Circuit held that the plaintiffs don't have to plead that. So that's essentially, those are the three alternatives that were presented to the Supreme Court at the argument this week. And it's always, you have to be careful reading too much into questions at Supreme Court arguments, but there seem to be no support in the questioning for the broad view expressed by the plaintiff and by the Sixth Circuit, which would be essentially strict liability if a good faith belief turns out to be wrong. There did seem to be questioning, a lot of questioning, that seemed to express support for the government's middle, what the government considered to be, and I think it's fair, the middle ground between the plaintiffs and the defendants, the government's view that there had to be a reasonable basis. If there was no reasonable basis for a belief, then that too could be a basis for liability. On the other hand, there was some questioning, and I think the lawyer for the petitioners, the defendants, tried to encourage the court in this regard. There was some questioning, particularly by Justice Alito, as to, well, what is reasonable? I mean, are we going to be put in a position of how do we determine what a reasonable basis is? And so that's where things are. I mean, the Supreme Court has a choice of three alternatives, and I think the petitioner's alternative would require a flat-out reversal. The government's alternative would, according to, as the government puts it, would require vacatur and a remand for a repleting, although the defendants argue that there was simply no basis in the complaint that was pleaded specifically, that there was any lack of reasonable basis, so that they argue that the government should, even in the government's theory, the judgment should be affirmed. And then the plaintiffs argue that even if the government's view is accepted, the judgment should be affirmed for the simple reason that there was a allegation in the complaint that there was no basis for the government. I mean, there's no basis for Omnicare's view that it was in compliance with law. And I suspect that with the government, I think the government, even the government, doesn't buy that. And I think there's really no factual allegation, I gather, in the complaint that's really specific that supports that, and so probably isn't sufficient under Twombly. So, but I think that overall, if the government's view is accepted, that would probably result in the case being sent back to the Court of Appeals. In all, I think that it is unlikely that the court will affirm. It's either going to reverse, as the petitioners ask for, or vacate, as the government requests.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.